Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Dixie Diamante is a survivor, but it wasn't always that way. Molested as a child by a family member, Dixie hid her secret for years, until the unspeakable occurred. Her own daughter was molested by the same person. Dixie was faced with the difficult decision of breaking the silence and telling her story. She did, and she hasn't looked back since. Out of this tragedy, Dixie founded a support group called Restoration Ministries that reaches women who are childhood victims of sexual abuse. Today, she's a life coach, bringing hope and healing to women of all ages. Her book, Climbing Out of the Box, is the topic of our discussion today. Dixie, welcome to Heartline.
Thank you, Rita.
I don't want her. That's not my baby. Take her away. Those were the words your mother spoke over you when you were born. When you were told that she said that, how did it affect you?
You know, it was the beginning of detachment for me, I think, not knowing what was ahead, of course, but I could see, as they would describe it to me, I could see that little unwanted baby in my mind, and I wondered about her. I could see her crying. I couldn't identify with her, so I think I began to detach even at that time. Once they convinced my mother I was hers, I have very little memory of my early childhood, only from old movies that they used to take of me when I was smiling and laughing with my dad.
Wow. Your birth was traumatic, too. And as a result, you couldn't lift your arm over your head, right?
No, I could not.
And that would be an injury that would cause you great shame and embarrassment. How did you deal with that?
You know, not many people ever recognize that it caused me great shame and embarrassment. And that is a really good question, because I felt both of those. Once I became aware of it, I don't have a recollection of what age I was at that point. But once I became aware of my handicap, it solidified that somehow I was flawed at the moment of my birth, because obviously my mother didn't want me, and it must have been because I had this injury. So my book describes how awful my school years were after that, because I always identified with the handicap of not being able to lift my arm. So I learned how to cover that up. Nobody ever really knew. When I was in PE as a kid, I would act like I was just dumb at PE so the kids wouldn't know that it was because I couldn't lift my arm. And they were always yelling at me to use both arms in games like volleyball and tetherball. I couldn't bring myself to tell my teacher that I just couldn't do it. So I was always the last picked for the teams, which further solidified that there was something wrong with me.
Mm-hmm. So it actually shaped your belief system about who you were.
It did. It did, from very earliest, my earliest memories.
And so you kind of built a false self around that. You hid it.
I did. I began to paint myself into this picture I had in my head and created what I wanted people to see in me.
Mm. Your home was filled with religious rules and regulations. You talked about that in the book. You found those increasingly hard to live up to. What were you believing about being a good Christian?
Well, my home itself with my mother and dad was not Christian, but my grandparents were, and I would spend my entire summers with them. My book goes into great detail of my grandpa's hellfire and brimstone church. So I related being a good Christian as one who had to measure up to legalistic ways. Even though I loved my grandmother and grandfather so much, the whole impression I got of Christianity was that if you were a good Christian, you couldn't cut your hair, you couldn't wear makeup, you couldn't wear jeans. It was all based on works, not grace. So this just reinforced the fact that, again, I wasn't a real person, because doing those things would just make me more of a freak. So even though I loved God and I would sit in their services and yearn for God, I just felt like I could never measure up because of all of the things that I was observing within their legalistic church.
Right. And so that set you on the performance treadmill. You know, I got to measure up. I'm only as good as my last performance. I got to keep trying.
Exactly.
Yeah, striving.
Exactly.
Your father began molesting you when you were about 7 years old. Mm-hmm. How did that abuse affect the way you thought about yourself?
Well, you can imagine. Incest is soul murder, and basically your mind, will, and emotions shut down at the point that happens, and up until he actually did it to me at the age of 7, I was a happy little girl from what I can remember. But at the point that that happens to a child, your life changes forever.
Sure.
My innocence and my childhood was lost. I thought again that there was something wrong with me, that my dad would want to do that to me. I thought there was something wrong with everything that I did. And as an incest survivor, most always feels that they're the only one in the world this happens to, which is the part of the whole sin of the whole thing, because you become this false person. So you have to keep the secret, and that's where the power the perpetrator has over the victim is, in the secret and not telling. And so I actually believed if I told that my whole life would disappear, my family would disappear, such as they were, everyone would abandon me. So as a result of that, I didn't trust men. I was afraid of men. And I was repeatedly molested until I was 12 years old.
Hmm. What was your relationship like with your dad prior to all of this? I mean, was it
before
normal?
He molested me?
Yeah.
From what I can remember, I was a happy little girl. Mm. He was very attentive to me, and I delighted in him.
And then at 12, it stopped.
It stopped. And I think it was because he had a fear of pregnancy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Your mother was also like a very critical person, especially of you, your appearance. How did that confirm the already established beliefs you had about who you were?
Well, I always felt inferior to her.
How so?
Well, she was a small person, and I was taller and larger than her. She always called me the Amazon. She told me that my feet were weird because I wore a size 7 and she wore a size 4. As I grew into a young, attractive girl, I'm pretty sure she was jealous of me because she made sure to always make sure I didn't feel acceptable in the way that I looked or what I did. She would never praise me about anything. And of course, deep down inside, I realized later that I always felt unprotected by her, because how could she not know what Dad was doing to me?
Yeah. And so what did you do with all those feelings, all that criticism? Did you stuff it? Did you tend to hold it in?
I stuffed it.
Mm-hmm.
I stuffed it down, and I, again, began even more so pretending that I was somebody that I wasn't. And I had this secret side to me. As a kid, though, I always felt like I was invisible when I would go to school, when I would have friends. I felt like I was an imposter, actually, that they didn't really know. If they knew the real me, they wouldn't want to be my friend.
Sure. And so you acted on this false self, and that's how you dealt with it?
Yes.
Okay, so then what happened after you got out of school was you married young to escape your unhappy home life. You had 2 kids. You talk about being a controller. How did that look in your marriage?
I married a passive guy. And he had his own issues. He couldn't hold down a job, but I basically married him to escape my home life. So I began to take over the entire scenario of our marriage and make life happen. I made us look like one big, wonderful family. We became very involved in church. I continued on with what I knew of
performing,
you know, working my way into the kingdom of God rather than receiving it by grace. Church people began to call us the Barbie and Ken because we were the perfect family with the perfect kids. And all the while, I was running everything behind the scenes.
Did you realize at that point, Dixie, that these were issues for you, or you were just kind of on overdrive?
I was on overdrive. I did not think they were issues. Actually, moving into even more involvement in the church, I actually thought that I was walking in faith.
Mm.
The things that I would struggle with and need to really confront and get out of denial with. I would convince myself I was walking in faith by creating what I wanted to be.
And all the while, you just stuffed the abuse, never told anyone about it.
And never told a soul.
I mean, did stuffing all that abuse come out in kind of crooked ways? Sometimes, you know, we develop an eating disorder or we're, you know, we do other things to cope with the pain that we've buried. Did any of that surface for you, or do you think it was all just driven into the performance?
No, I think my drug of choice to cover up the pain was ministry. I became more and more involved in the church. Mm-hmm. I was there every time the doors opened. I actually made my kids, they were in the church nursery constantly. The more minister I became, I was a leader. I became quite a leader. And so my accolades and the way that I felt about myself came from what I got from people
sure.
in ministry. So, no, I didn't develop any eating disorders or anything like that. I just began to sink deeper into my persona of who I thought I was.
Mm-hmm. So controlling.
Very controlling, codependent, instead of requiring my husband, you know, become responsible man of the house. I just covered for him and I did everything. I was in total control.
You questioned your salvation a lot and you questioned how all these bad things could have happened to you if God really loved you. How did you finally resolve that issue about your salvation?
My book goes into my antics with God in depth, but some of them are pretty funny in a sad sort of way. Maybe I played at being acceptable when I felt like I wasn't. I followed what I saw others do to obtain salvation. I would watch people. I really, no one ever explained to me how to receive Christ. And so I really never knew how to do it. I just played the game. And it wasn't until the Lord brought me to a place of all by myself one night. I opened the scriptures to Romans 10, 9, and 10, that if you believe and receive him and confess him that you're saved. And I was just shocked. Because I had been doing that for years, and I thought that I was working my way into the kingdom, and all I had to do was receive his gift. So because no one showed me the scripture that salvation simply is receiving Jesus and loving him and knowing and believing all he accomplished to give us freedom, so I would go to the altar and cry a lot like I saw people do, and in the book I'm very descriptive about these times. I didn't really feel any different, though, until the night that I saw Romans 10, 9, and 10. So it began to transform my life at that point. But for years after that, I continued to. It just reinforced that now that I was born again, I didn't even really have to think about the past anymore. Maybe the past didn't even really happen. So I'm a brand new person. I don't have to deal with my thought life.
Mm.
You know, it was quite a deception that I pulled myself into.
What were you believing about God with this whole salvation question?
I believed, I loved God with all my heart. I talked to him all the time. And I didn't understand why these things were happening to me. And I don't really know at this point where the reality of him came in. It was a slow process, kind of like the peeling back of the layers of an onion. It wasn't until many years later, though, that he brought me face to face with intimacy with Jesus. It was more based on works.
Do you think, did you believe he loved you?
I did, but I also believed that I was flawed, so maybe he didn't love me as much as he loved somebody else.
Mm.
I mean, or else, why would he let that happen to me?
Right. So that question always lingered in the back of your mind, like maybe
yes.
Below the subconscious surface. Okay, so were you happy in your marriage at this point?
No, I wasn't. I actually, well, in the beginning of the marriage, when I had babies and I was totally into the house with the picket fence, I loved being a young mother. I loved having children, and I buried myself in that. Was not content in the marriage, but that's just something I didn't pay any attention to. So as they grew, though, and I became more busy in the church, I began to realize that the things that I needed to deal with and confront at home, I was ignoring by just getting more and more busy into ministry. So this went on for almost 25 years.
Mm. How did your devotion to the ministry affect the kids?
I burned them out. They'll tell you today as adults that they grew sick of the church nursery and then children's church, and I had them in private school, even though we couldn't afford it. Our whole weekends were at church, and I taught them that that's what it took to be a good Christian. eventually came to realize when, as they grew older, that it was out of balance and they resented it. They have a few good memories of being in church and being involved in different children's groups and stuff, but today they won't go to an organized church because of the burnout that I put them through.
Mm. That must have been very hard to come to terms with.
It's hard, and the part about that today is that I missed a lot of time with them that I thought this is what God wanted me to do, and it was totally, totally out of order. We know that family needs to come first, and that we are the church, and wherever we gather together, we're gathering in His name. And so I've been, sharing that with my kids in this day and age, and they are much more accepting of who God is in their life, and they both know the Lord and realize that it's whatever they do for Him is what counts.
Yeah. So you had this whole thing going at church, and that's where you were getting life. You felt important and valuable, but at the same time, you were operating in a huge amount of denial, and denial is a powerful force. How did that happen that you broke through this wall of denial?
Well, I found the validation I was looking for through it, and then I became addicted to ministry. Breaking through the wall of denial didn't come until I found out that Heather, my daughter, had been molested as well. And that was the turning point in my life. I had found out, actually, that one of her grandfathers had molested her. And in questioning her about it, she began to tell me about my father. And it just threw me into some sort of split. I'm such a protective mother throughout her entire life. I wouldn't even leave her with babysitters. And yet, because of my denial and because I had never exposed or confronted what had happened to me, mm-hmm. he did the very same thing to her. And how he got to her, I don't know. But at that point, my life just exploded. It threw me back into all of the memories that she described to me, the events. It was like it was happening to me all over again.
Sure.
So it took quite a while for me to pull myself out of that, to begin to minister to her in the way that I needed to as a mom, and begin to let her share, which was something I never got to do, and began to move towards healing. It also threw me into changing my whole scope of ministry. I became very angry at the enemy for attacking my family the way that he had when I had been so good in ministry.
Yeah, I'd given all
so
this.
So I began doing support groups for women who had been molested as children, and I did that for about 5 years, and the Lord finally brought me to a place to where I finally exposed the secret, and that was the beginning of real healing for me. I had to go and tell my mother what had happened after all those years.
Oh, you must have dreaded that moment.
Oh, it was horrible. I cried for days telling the Lord not to make me go, but I knew I had grown to the place at that point that I knew if I did not expose the secret within our family line, that it would continue on. I began to see it was a generational pattern within the family on my father's side that went all the way back to my great-grandfather. And then memories, I started having memories of that feeling with those specific men within his family. And I knew that the exposure of it would bring the darkness to the light and stop the generational pattern. I knew that if I didn't do it, my grandchildren would be molested as well. And so it was my driving force, and it changed lives forever.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, it had to just take a lot of courage to be obedient and go and do that. Tell us what happened.
It took me 2 years before I finally was obedient.
Really?
To go up and do it. But at that point, I have every assurance today that by doing that, I broke the generational curse, because secret, no one would ever talk about anything like that.
And what was the outcome of all that?
Even more alienation from my parents. My mother at first fell apart, and I felt totally responsible. I felt like I had ruined her life. So I had to continually tell myself that what I had done had to be done to expose the evil. The darkness had to come into the light, and continue to remind myself that I was the victim. I was not the perpetrator, and it was his responsibility what this is doing to my mother. And she eventually fell back into her denial system, and as the years progressed, she pretended like it never happened, and I became the bad person within the family. I was already pretty alienated from all of my family, but at that point, it pretty much severed the relationship.
Oh my gosh.
She chose to stay and not. I think she did confront him, but he has a real manipulative way about him to pull her back in.
Were you angry at God, Dixie?
No, I don't understand why I wasn't. I felt more like God was using me to stop a pattern within a family line that had been going on for generations, and I suspect that there were many, many cousins and people within my family that they're all incest was pretty much running rampant, and I think that God used me to stop that. I don't think that God had anything to do with me being molested. I think we're walking through an evil world, mm-hmm. and the Lord can use the bad things that happen to us to bring us into a place of reaching people who've been through the same thing to help them.
Dissociating from a trauma of abuse,
uh-huh.
It's normal. It happened to you. It happened to your daughter. It's normal for a lot of victims to question whether or not it really happened.
Yes.
Did that happen to you? Did you go in and out of that at first when you finally came to terms with it?
Questioning whether it really happened?
Yeah.
Yes. I did. In my early years of Christianity, of walking with the Lord, many times it was such a distant memory. I'd pushed it so far away. I thought, did I really make that up? Maybe I dreamed it. And for a while there, I did act like it didn't happen. And I found in working with molest survivors that many of them. They either have every bit of memory and none of the feelings, they remove themselves from the emotions, or they don't have any memory at all, but they have all the symptoms of being a molest survivor. They just have a clue that that's what happened to them. With me, I had complete memories of everything, every time it happened, and the places and the smells and everything, but the emotions were gone. And it took me until just about 10 years ago to realize that I had learned to detach early in my childhood from all the stuff that happened to me as a baby. And when he began to molest me, I felt like I was floating on the ceiling, looking down at it happening to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just reinforced that over the years. And then I became very active in ministry, which helped me to cover it all up even more and not deal with my own issues. It was interesting. I had ministered in so many different ministries. I'd founded ministries. I had reached women all along the Central Coast with Bible studies, and yet I hadn't even begun to deal with my own stuff yet.
Yeah.
And many times, and I found this with other women I've talked to, we hide behind ministry. We hide behind our leadership qualities without even really dealing with ourselves. And for me, it took that happening to my daughter to bring me to a place of beginning to unravel all that. From that point, my marriage began to unravel, finding out that both his dad and my dad had molested his little girl. My husband could not handle it, and he ended up leaving. My life began to fall apart. All of my involvement in the church became almost a persecution. I began to be confronted on doing my support groups, and people in authority began to challenge me, and eventually lost my church family, to make a long story short. And my husband left. At the same time, Heather was beginning to rebel because her dad had left and she'd been molested by both of her grandfathers. And I found myself one day totally alone. We lost everything. We lost our home.
Oh, my gosh,
myself and my two children had to move into a little tiny apartment. I began to get claustrophobic, stripped away of everything and everybody. And that was when I came face to face with Jesus. And he began to show me step by step that there wasn't one thing I could do to make him love me any more than he loved me at that exact moment. that he would be everything to me and I would get to know him on a intimate level. I knew him on an intellectual level. I know I was born again, but to know him on an intimate level, outside of any kind of thing I could ever do for him, he began to reveal himself to me in that capacity. And for 5 years, and I realized I was such a strong-willed person that that's what it took for me, for him to break through the religiosity and the legalism and all of the things I had gotten caught up into, which exposed me to spiritual abuse because people in authority were always wanting to use me. And I realize now I was actually looking for a father figure with men in authority, but it always turned out they would use me and abuse me emotionally. So all of that had to be stripped away before my eyes would open.
Mm.
And God did it.
Powerful.
Completely restored me back into him. And actually, I'm closer to him today than I've ever been in my entire life as a result of going through those 5 years of total isolation.
You know, you ask a powerful question in the book. How does one go about living when everything they believed in no longer exists? Do you have an answer for that now?
Well, I do. I think the only way you can go on living after all of that is having that personal relationship with Jesus. I have to say, he's very, very personal to me. I have learned to totally immerse myself in him. And it has, as a result of him taking me through those 5 years, it stripped all judgmentalism out of me and all legalism. I feel like I'm much more moldable in his hands today. I began to see that he had been preparing me through all those years to do what I'm doing today, which is life coaching and to eventually write the book of my story. So, I don't think that I would be where I am today without knowing the Lord the way that I do.
Dixie, what a powerful story. What a redemptive story. Thank you so much for taking time today to share it with us. And God bless you.
Thank you for having me, Rita. I greatly appreciate it.
Okay. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.